Hey, happy Thursday, everybody. It's Rich Birch from the Unseminary Podcast. Today's episode is all about reaching the next generation, and you're going to love it. I want to remind you as well that today's episode is brought to us by our friends at Houseright. These guys are incredible, and you might be coming to the end of this year thinking about 2019 or maybe even 2020, and you've got a project on the horizon. Maybe this is an audio-visual upgrade or maybe a new building. You need to talk to Houseright. They have worked with massive churches of over 10,000 people, and they've been well-loved by them, but even normal-sized churches of 500 to 1,250 in that range. Maybe you're launching a new campus in the next year, and you're wondering where to start. You need to start with Houseright. From helping do just a simple kind of smart, cost-effective capture of a video message to thinking through portable systems in a school or to a simple build-out of an entire retail space for a new location, Houseright is what you're looking to do. And really, the best thing you can do is to bring them in early on your projects. You really can't bring them in too early. Your staff and volunteers are already stretched, but what you need to do is bring experts like Houseright around them to help support them, really to help build out their capabilities. I'd love for you to meet Matt Bakay. He is the owner of Houseright. Incredibly incredible guy. He would love to help you. He's an educated engineer, but really wants to dive deep and into your project. So what you need to do today is go to houseright.com to book a time with Matt. He'd love to talk and get a sense of what's going on in your project. He's super helpful, super friendly, and really just wants to help your church succeed. Well, let's get on with today's episode. You're going to love this interview today on Unseminary. Let's go.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. My name's Rich, the host here, and I am so glad that you've decided to tune us in. You're going to be really rewarded for that. We've got a great conversation coming up today with JP Pokluta. He is a pastor at a church that you should be tracking if you're not. It's called Watermark Community Church. Welcome to the show today, JP.
Rich, man, thanks for having me on. Excited to be on here at Unseminary.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for giving us your time today and diving in. I know that this is going to be a topic today that a lot of leaders are wrestling through and trying to figure out what we can do next. And so I appreciate you investing to be with us today. Why don't you tell us, for the folks that don't know about Watermark, kind of give us a bit of the Watermark story and then tell us about your role at the church.
Watermark, yeah, thank you. Watermark's been around for about 20 years. It started with about 8 or 9 families in a living room 20 years ago, and it's grown to now about 12 to 15,000 on the weekend, 3 campuses. 4 campuses. We launched our 4th campus last weekend in Frisco. So the first campus is there in Dallas at what we call the High Five. And that's 75 and 635. It's one of the largest intersections in the country. And then Plano there is kind of just central Plano off of 75 here in the DFW area. And then Fort Worth just moved into a new building over there in Fort Worth. And then Frisco has just launched in high schools. And my role there is I started in the community area, so kind of small group focused 12 years ago. I've been on staff for 12 years. And then we started a young adult ministry called The Porch. And that was about 100 people gathering on a Tuesday night. And I've gotten to play a significant role in that through the years. And that's become my primary focus for the past 10 years of ministry, I would say. And that's grown to about 4,000 in Dallas on a Tuesday, and then we have 10 other campuses around the country, and so in Tulsa, in El Paso, in Fort Worth, Houston, and around the country, there's these other gatherings that will stream in the porch, and that's where I've kind of given my life is helping churches, reach these young adults, so people in their 20s and 30s, post college, but although there is a large continuum in college as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's amazing. This is the part I want. Well, first of all, I'm excited to have you on, and I'm excited to dig into this. I think, there are many of us who are wrestling with how do we really reach the future of the church? How do we find folks who and see people get connected with the teaching of Christ and get people plugged into the church? We all know that we're only one generation away from complete extinction. And so the thing that is notable about the porch is, and the ministry that you're leading there, is really your ability to do that. I wonder if we could dive in a little bit deeper and kind of give us a sense of what's happening at the porch, kind of describe the ministry that's happening today. And then maybe we could start to pick apart some of those lessons that you've been learning.
Yeah, that's great, Rich. Yeah, I always say kind of the off-putting statement is, you know, if you're not reaching the future of the church, then your church has no future. And you just said it's obvious. I wish it was. I think it's less obvious to some. And I don't mean that to be off-putting, because it's really just a math problem, right? If we're not reaching those that are going to be here after we're gone, then they're not going to be here. And so what the porch looks like, to answer that question, is really like a church service. And so for the first 30 minutes, you come in, there's worship. Shane and Shane lead worship most Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. And then there's about 30 to 45 minutes of Bible teaching. And so we're putting that on the top shelf, but we're addressing we're not watering down the theology, or it's not gospel light or anything. However, we are, we're surrounding them with people who can answer their questions. So like once they hear the gospel or the scripture being taught, then they can come up afterwards and ask questions of other people. And so, sorry, got distracted on something.
Yeah, but, no problem.
And so then we have an opportunity for them to get in small groups afterwards. And so there's like two side community rooms where they can go in and just say, hey, what is community like? And then that's really where they will then kind of assemble into the church. And so that's our hope. We hope that the church, the porch, is really a front door to the church. And so our hope, we're serving the city. People are coming from all different churches around the city. And our hope is that they wouldn't consider that church, but that they would actually assimilate into a local body.
That's interesting. Now, what give us a sense of that? So, well, from what I understand, you obviously have a kind of a worship moment, a teaching space, and then from there, you're transitioning into small groups within the kind of same environment or within the same building. What would you say is the piece of that that God seems to be using uniquely? That's like, hey, this here is a part of the unique thing that has driven to the point where you're able to reach so many folks.
Yeah, I think that it's three things. And so I would say, number one, to lead with authenticity. That is what I see lacking in the church. So these young adults, they grew up in church, you know, if they did grow up in church, and the parents were like, hey, get your act together, we're going to go in here, let's pretend like we have it all together. And there's like a spirit of inauthenticity in the church at large that doesn't make sense to me, because I don't see it in the scriptures. And when we get up there and we lead out with our struggles, and so like for me, 16 years ago, I was at a bar, someone invited me to church, I sat in the back row hungover, you know, wrestling with what I really believe. Like, is there really a God, and who is he? And as I began to explore world religions and continue to trip over Christ and gave my life to him. Listen, I was a sex addict. I was, I was completely given to pornography, love to party. There were some drug use mixed in there. And so when I get up there, I'm not like, hey, I have my act all together. Like, I am a complete mess that Christ saved. And I'm not saying that in some kind of trite cliche way. Like, it's just the truth. And I think these people respond to the truth. I'm not someone trying to be a replica of their favorite celebrity pastor, or, you know, getting up there like, hey, you know, they walk a foot above the earth, or the second coming of Jesus. But no, like just saying, hey, here's the deal. I understand your struggles. In fact, when I started in this ministry, the only thing that I really had to offer the church was, hey, I know these people. Like, because I was them not long ago. Right, I know where they're at. And I know what they're struggling with. And so I would say lead with authenticity. The second thing is expand their vision. Like, they want to do something bigger than themselves. The biggest mistake the church makes in trying to reach millennials is dumbing it down. And saying, hey, we just, you know, please come, and you don't have to, you know, stay very long, and you can just serve here, not a big deal. I'm like, man, Jesus had these huge asks of people. Like, he would say, hey, come and die. Let the dead bury the dead, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I've seen them really respond to, no, we want you to join a church. We're calling you to purity, to sobriety. But more than anything else, we're calling you to live with reckless abandonment for Christ. Mm-hmm. And their heart responds to that when someone is calling them to something bigger than themselves. And so that leads to the last point I would just say is deploying them. And so I always say, I don't want to do ministry to people, but through people. And so what does it look like to give them opportunities to do ministry, to trust them, to give them roles to play beyond just standing at a door and greeting someone? But hey, really, what does it look like for you to go overseas with us, to serve in South Dallas or West Dallas or with ministry partners? And man, give us your week, give us your weekend, take vacation and let's go and live out the gospel in this way. Or let us teach you to live out the gospel in your work environment. And people respond to that.
Interesting. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that one. I find that interesting. This idea of deploying people into ministry, you know, one of the things that, you know, earlier this year, I released a book on church growth. And one of the five things that I've noticed in churches that are growing, both in the church I've been a part of and other churches, is this idea of getting people out of their seats and into the streets, that faith obviously ultimately needs to be in action, which is not a particularly new idea, but it seems to be novel in the sense of we went through a phase for years where, you know, faith seemed to all be about what was between our ears rather than, you know, what we did with our hands. And so what has that looked like in the deploying? What kinds of things are, you give a few examples there, but can you give us some other, you know, kind of flesh that a little bit more, give us a bit of a sense of what that looks like?
Yeah, I would have your listeners consider the opposite of deploying, right? Which is consumerism Christianity, which millennials, young adults are, you know, crazy, I'll say victim to or capable of or guilty of. And so that's, you know, they're going out there in the buffet of Christianity. They're listening to their favorite speakers. They're consuming podcasts, but they're not doing anything. And I don't want that person to be fooled into thinking that they have some semblance of faith, because faith in its essence has to be worked out. It has to produce, you know, James tells us that. And so really just every time they come into the porch, there's a full suite of offerings of like, hey, go here with us. This is what we're doing this weekend. And it could be anything from a food kitchen to what you may call a mission trip. We call them short-term discipleship trips, just to cast the vision that, hey, everything we do is mission. Right. And so, but if you want to go overseas on a short-term discipleship trip with us, something like, so those kinds of things. There's a weekend called Unashamed Weekend. Mm-hmm. That is something we're doing monthly now, where it's a mission trip in the city. And so you go, we stay at ministry partners, we serve, we're sharing the gospel on the streets and downtown. And that's an interesting story. Can I tell you briefly how that started?
Absolutely. Yeah, totally.
So I was actually overseas with a group from Haiti. We were in Haiti. And one of the guys is a business young man, you know, in the business world. And we were just sharing the gospel door to door, and I was working through an interpreter, which is a kind of a frustrating process. You know, you say something, they repeat it. You say something, they repeat it. And he was a believer. So I finally just said, hey, you just tell them, just share the gospel, you know, just tell them about Jesus.
Yes.
And that night, as we were debriefing, this young man, this businessman, just said, hey, you're asking him to share the gospel in his village. And I said, that's absolutely right. That's what I'm asking. And he said, yeah, but we don't do that. And I was like, hey, be quiet. Yeah. You know, why are you saying, why are you calling me out in front of everybody?
Yeah, yeah.
and he just said, hey, when I get back to Dallas, I'm going to do that. And that was the beginning of this movement we call Unashamed, that now has moved to monthly. The entire church is in on it. And we just go through our city sharing the gospel and working through ministry partners and you know, helping them succeed in serving in the city. And so those are those opportunities to deploy. I mean, others are like, we have five teams at the porch, about 250 volunteers led by, mm-hmm. by 10 leaders, a female and a male leader for each team. Mm-hmm. And those they're lay leaders, but we give them a budget. You know, they run retreats with their teams. They are extensions of our staff without the hit to our payroll. I mean, they're serving, they're bivocational.
Right. Very cool. Well, I wonder, you know, if you could dispel a myth for us. I think there's a lot of people when we think about reaching this generation, reaching millennials. I was born in 1974, which is the lowest birth rate year of the 20th century. So I am like right down the middle of Gen X. So I spent all my time, all my ministry career balanced somewhere between, you know, the baby boomers and millennials. And so you're trying to hand ministry from the baby boomers to the millennials. But one of the, you know, I think misnomers or the, you know, the false truths about that's out there is that, hey, you know, next generation, they really do. And you mentioned this earlier, they're looking for like some sort of watered down truth. They're looking for some, you know, just kind of let's make it easy, make it, you know, tell us a bit more about that. Pull that apart. What does that look like for you at the porch as you're teaching or you're, you know, working with people that teach at the porch and then as you're doing discipleship, what does that look like for you guys?
Well, I'll talk about my transition into the porch. So when it started, like I said, it was about 100 people gathering on in a assembly room, mm-hmm. a small assembly room. And what it looked like is you would show up. Well, I'll back up and just say that the greatest thing that I observed when the ministry was kind of passed to me is the volunteers and the leaders were discouraged or at least uninspired. And it would look like you would show up, you know, let's say 15, 30 minutes before it starts. And we'd hold hands in a circle, we'd pray, and then you kind of say, okay, I want you to greet at a door. I want you to, you know, usher people down the aisles. Hey, you help people in the parking lot find out where we're at. And you just kind of divvied up these responsibilities, ready, break, and everybody scattered. And sadly, I found that to be pretty normal in churches today. And so I showed up on the scene. I'm just like, hey, this is a problem. And I said, let me ask you a question. Who here just wants to be an usher? And some hands went up. And I just said, hey, we don't need ushers anymore. And so respectfully, like, go do something else, work in the nursery or, you know, but we don't have that position anymore. Who here just wants to be a greeter? And some hands went up, you know, they're like, oh, maybe it's the greeters he's looking for. And I'm like, hey, you're relieved of your job. We don't need greeters anymore. And I said, but listen, if you want to be a host, a missionary, if you want to look for someone that is struggling with thinking about suicide, or maybe they just had an abortion, or they just got in a fight with their boyfriend, or, you know, they had a hard day at work and you want to go and pry into their lives and sit with them and share the gospel with them and point them to scriptures that could help their situation. Like we're in, if you want to be an evangelist, like we have that spot. And if you want to be a pastor, like not just helping someone find their seat, but you want to come alongside them and engage into their life. And maybe you sit with them, you know, maybe you introduce them to someone else, but you find out what got them there and, you know, where they're at in their faith and their journey. And you share the gospel with them. Like, if you want to do that, like we have a position for that. And they kind of looked at me with these blank stares, like, I think he just fired us, you know, and they said kind of collectively as a group, well, you don't know how to do that. I was like, oh, dude, I'm not worried about that. Like, we'll train you. Mm-hmm. We'll train you. But this is what we need, people to do this. And if you're not interested in doing that, then we're not interested in partnering with you. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy what happened, because before that, I was begging people, please come serve with us. Please come serve with us. You know, we need people to serve. After that, there's a line out the door. I don't have enough positions for all the people who are coming. And like, we grew. Remember, the ministry was about 100 people showing up. Well, then all of a sudden we had 100 volunteers that wanted to serve. And it's like, okay, we had to create a holding tank, really like a university, kind of a porch university for them to go through for 3 months where they would be poured into and, you know, taught just basic evangelism and some, you know, basic memory verses and really trained to kind of get exposure to the different teams before we placed them on there. And so that's even an aspect you see of kind of that deploying, doing ministry through people, not to people, that I think God has blessed there uniquely. Mm.
That's really cool. One of the other things I just wonder if I would love to get your comments on. I'm assuming, by definition, the reason why, you know, Watermark decided to launch, and this could be an assumption, you'd be like, that's a wrong assumption, but I'm assuming a part of the reason why the porch even exists is because, you know, there are certain traditions or approaches to ministry that have been passed down from those pesky Gen Xers or beyond that just aren't working. What are some of the kind of traditions or things that you've had to try to let go of or you've had to shed to make the porch work well?
Well, I'm going to go to your assumption and address that. You know, I think kind of the magic of the porch is that when they assimilate into Watermark, what they're getting on the weekend is not altogether that different. Right. And so, you know, it's multi-generational, but I think what happens in a lot of young adult ministries is some disagreement between the young adult pastor and the senior pastor. And so the young adult pastor thinks, hey, I've got to do this to attract these kinds of people. But then those kinds of people don't have anything to assimilate to. And I would challenge your listeners to, you know, take note of their sacred cows. And I ask people this, you know, all the time, like, hey, what are your sacred cows? And the problem with sacred cows is they graze in blind spots. And that's where they graze. And so people are always like, well, we don't have sacred cows. I'm like, great. What day do you meet? You know, they're like, well, we meet on Sunday. I'm like, can you meet on Saturday? They're like, no, we're not going to change the day we meet. I'm like, okay, cool. Let's call the day a week of your gathering. That's a sacred cow. Now, what else? Do you do hymns? Do you do hymns? Do you worship? You know, do you have a band? Do you, you know, is it monitors? They have in ears. Do you teach 30 minutes, 45 minutes? Could you go 15 minutes? Well, no, we're not going to go 15 minutes. Okay. Let's call the time of teaching. That's a sacred cow. What else do you offer? You know, and just when you start asking those questions, you begin to see what people aren't willing to give up. And it sounds crazy and radical, but I think we have to start with, all right, what did Jesus do? Let's call that, you know, what we need to do. That's what we must do. And then everything around that is just, you know, tactics and, you know, strategy that may or may not be right. But if something's not working, I would say, if something's not working and it's extra biblical, I would put a bullet in it yesterday. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's cool, man. That's, I think, a good thing for us to wrestle with, particularly as we look at designing, you know, our experiences and just our strategy to continue to ask the question, hey, what is it that we need to get rid of, that we need to shed, that may actually be holding us back? You know, there are those things in all of our ministries that worked at one point and that actually helped people come to know Jesus. But for whatever reason, the culture changes, the community that we're serving changes, and they no longer work. In fact, actually might hinder people from taking steps closer to Christ. And the problem with that is because they worked at one point, we have a hard time getting rid of them. And I think we all have to have very open hands around those issues and figure out, okay. And I love that, you know, like really poking through, let's talk about everything we do that could potentially be a sacred cow. JP, you've actually written a book that we want to talk a little bit about that's all about all of this area, you know, that you've spent some of your lessons and learned, you know, what you've learned from this, called Welcome to Adulting. I wonder if you could talk through why you wrote this book. It's a lot of time, effort, and energy to pull together, you know, a book. Why'd you do that?
Yeah, well, let me just say first, because I listen to podcasts, Rich, and I know that you know, people do book tours and they go on and they... And there's always, you're so gracious to even bring up the book, and it can, if your listener can feel like, oh, that's, he's on here to sell a book. Man, I'm on here because I care about the future of the church. And that's why I wrote this book, is because I've spent the last decade of my life doing ministry to 20s and 30 somethings. And I trusted Christ as a 20 something. And I want to see Christ's bride strengthened. I want to see this generation rise up. I want to see revival. I want to see a great awakening. And I think that even though the fastest growing religions right now, they're saying, is the nuns or the nunners, people leaving the faith. What I really see, my experience from my perspective, is I see a generation rising up that wants to do something greater. They want to change the world, and they want pastors to call them to something greater than themselves. And they need help, man. We've babied them to some degree, and they're getting in the real world, and they're bumping their head against the real world. And they're like, man, do I go back to college? What do I do? How do I convince someone to spend the rest of their life with me? How do I find a job, a calling? And so I just saw some patterns over the past decade of ministry and wrote down some things that were helpful to those guys. And it's been fun, just, you know, specifically, you know, parents have bought this as a graduation present and gift to, you know, to kids, but companies also, or churches, or even church staff has bought Welcome to Adulting for, you know, all the millennials on their staff, and have just said, hey, this is really helpful. We've gotten a return on this investment. We've seen kind of an uptick in some of the clarity and some of the challenges that we were bumping into trying to reach that generation. And so for all of those reasons, this book was written.
Yeah, and it's from what I can tell, it's a collection of you know, really the kinds of topics and things that you've been talking about and working with, you know, the folks that you serve on a regular basis over these last 10 years. Is that, you know, I think the thing, and when I took a look at it, the part that stuck out to me is this would be a great, you know, reference point, conversation starter for all kinds of church leaders around, hey, how are we talking to the next generation? What are we doing to, apply the timeless truth of Scripture to this current generation? What are we doing to, you know, to try to help that that group? And so, I think it could be a huge tool for so many people that are listening in today to you know, spend some time wrestling through and really using it as a mirror to look at ourselves and say, is this, you know, how is it that we're communicating? Are we because you know, JP and the Porch more broadly have a proven track record of engaging the next generation. And all of our churches need to be doing that. And so the question is, you know, how are we doing that at our church? And I think this could be a great tool for churches who are trying to wrestle through how we talk about things. As we know, at the end of the day, you know, the you know, how we interact with people, how we communicate is critically important to, you know, to how, you know, to our church and to the growth of our church.
That's right. I think there's a shift that always happens from younger brother to older brother, you know, in the prodigal son story, where we start out, you know, lost. We come into the love of the Father, but then we get accustomed and we forget that we were lost, and we forget that people were patient with us. And so every generation looks back on the upcoming generation and just thinks, you know, they're narcissistic and they're lazy and, you know, this and that, whatever.
So true.
And we forget, man, we forget that somebody was so patient with us that we also were narcissistic, that we were lazy. You look at the number one question the disciples asked over and over and over and over and over, you know, Jesus, who's the greatest? Who's the greatest? Which of us are the greatest? Who's going to sit at your right and your left in your glory? And so Generation A was pretty dang narcissistic too. And so now you have Gen Y and Gen Z on the scene. And I think learning them and being students of them is really the first step to reaching them. And I think this book can help people do that.
Yeah. It's funny, again, as I was joking earlier about being a Gen Xer, you know, there was a time where people were, you know, there was all these conversations out there around reaching Gen X. People don't care about Gen X anymore. Let's be honest. It's all about the millennials. But the joke I have made to many millennials is like, you just got to wait about another 5 years and we'll all be obsessed with reaching Gen Z. And so, you know, that's coming. We have to constantly be thinking about how are we leaning in, you know, what are we doing, you know, to kind of, you know, worry about the future. So I would really encourage people who are listening in. First of all, JP, I've really appreciated you, you know, being here on the show and getting
Likewise.
A chance to interact a little bit with us. If people want to pick up a copy of the book, where can they do that?
Yeah, you know, anywhere books are sold. And so Amazon obviously is, it's on there. And then welcometoadultingbook.com if you just want to see more information on the heart behind the book and resources around it. Barnes & Noble's, you know, Lifeway, it really anywhere books are sold.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'd encourage people to pick it up. This is a great time of year for you to, you know, grab something that, you know, like you say, maybe for a gift for your team or, you know, as a reference for maybe a new series. I suspect that in 2019, this is a little prophecy here from me, is I suspect that in 2019, we're going to see a bunch of Welcome to Adulting series in churches across the country, because that's a great hook and a great framework for people to think through. JP, if people want to get in touch with you or with the Porch, or, you know, just kind of track along with you, what's another, you know, any other way that they can do that?
Yes. Our website is theporch.live. We have an app in the App Store and the Android store, a free app. You can listen to the messages there, share them with your kids and young adults in your ministry. And then you can always email me at theporch@watermark.org. So theporch@watermark.org, and respond to all of those. And just super grateful. And thanks for even bringing up the book. And it's, you know, I saw today it's under $10 on Amazon. And so,
nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
It's a good value. That's great. Thanks so much, JP. Appreciate being on the show today. Take care.
Hey, thank you so much, Rich. Appreciate you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter. at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.